Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
From the Race Across America Mobile Studios at the DoubleTree in Annapolis, Maryland, we're here with new record holders, Team Beamer, who set a pretty blinding race across America, averaging 24.91 miles an hour, set the new average speed record. They also set a time record at 5 days, 3 hours, 42 minutes. And we're here with a whole bunch of the team members. Let's pass the mic and have you introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Chris DeMarkey.
Michael Olheiser.
Joshua Stockinger.
Craig Streit.
And on the other side of the room we have...
Carl Bordein.
Kurt Brodhag.
Tony Restuccia.
So, looks like seven... So, Chris, let's start with you. You've been out here a number of times on a four-person relay. What was it that really motivated you to come out and race as an eight? Because that looks like a logistical nightmare to me, especially if you really want to set a record and go fast.
You know, talking about the eight-man versus the four-man, we talked about it for several weeks. And, yes, logistical nightmare to go fast. But our faith in Tony Restuccio to put something together and Kurt to back him up and come up with a plan made it for an easy decision, not to mention the ability to do this race and try to do it in record time at the moment, and you get twice as much sleep and twice as less riding was very appealing.
Now, Tony, your name came up as put this together. Are you like the logistical king on stuff like this?
Well, there's actually too many logistics for one person to do it, I think. I kind of focus more on like the racing logistics, the strategy of how long riders are out, how many vehicles we have, how often people get to go to sleep. There's still so much more, though, that even I don't deal with, like, you know, what's in each vehicle. And it, like, Ken does a lot of that. But yeah, as far as like the strategy that the racers see, that's kind of what I deal with the most.
So I'd like to go into depth in that, but Phil did say he would kill me if we, went that route. So
he got the message from me pretty clearly.
Okay. So, Kurt, you guys put a lot of faith in each other, and I guess one thing that really sticks out to me in relay is generally somebody has a bad day or a bad pull, and it doesn't seem like you guys ever did.
No, we really didn't. One thing with our rotation is, since we had four people, if someone had a bad pull, someone could always cover, but we all ride together, we're all teammates, we all know each other, and I don't think there's one pull at all that someone had to cover for somebody else. So it was pretty amazing, yeah. And one thing I want to touch on, which we haven't really touched on before, is I think we have the record for not only having the fastest time, but probably the smallest budget and the smallest crew. We always pride ourselves on doing this as minimal as possible, and the money that we have extra to raise for our charity. And our budget this year, I haven't crunched the numbers, is probably like $55,000. For an 8-man team, that's unheard of. And the other thing is we have 12 crew members, and for an 8-man team, that's also unheard of. So we have a combination of like a couple of vets that we've had, but then also we have three or four people that we didn't even know that came in. And I put an ad out on Facebook, and they came in, they answered the ad, we met them the day of the race, and we all meshed together, which is a pretty amazing accomplishment. Something that, you know, if you think about it, 5-6 days in a car with people you don't even know, and you have all the faith in, yeah, we're all riders, but we have crew members that helped us out just as much. So we have 8 people, but then we have additional 12 people, so we have 20 people that were all, you know, a big part of this.
So interesting, talking about the crew, and please tell me your name again.
Carl.
So something that came up that I want to bring up in the award ceremony tonight is one of the crew came up and told us that from Oceanside to wherever you made your last switch, he did 500 bike exchanges. And that's only one of the crew.
Yeah, the crew did an amazing job with those exchanges. I mean, they got out of the car so many more times than the riders. Blows me away how much work they did behind the scenes too, not let alone those actual transitions. But it's also the little things that some of the crew did too, like having a door open for you or making sure I don't slip on my cleats while I get in the van because the step's slippery. I mean, they were there watching out for my safety just as much as they were there trying to make us as fast as possible.
And that's funny you say something as little as having a door open or keeping you from slipping, because you broke the speed record by a mere 3 minutes. And just think about all the opportunities and all those exchanges where that could be lost. And I think of the number of exchanges, and no, I don't want to go into detail about that because you do want to keep it kind of secret. But you can lose a ton of time in exchanges. And yes, you're a whole lot faster when you're taking shorter pulls, but at the same time, that time where you're getting the new rider going, you've got a real potential to blow some speed.
You're exactly right, but exactly wrong, because you also can make a ton of time up. If you've got a team working as fast as we did and congealing the way we did, we didn't lose time. We were actually making time on exchanges. We're not going to, again, strategy and whatever else. But so it was huge. But the way I'll come back to the crew and the way we picked spots to stop, the way we picked exchanges made all the difference in the world. So instead of losing 30 seconds, we were losing zero. We were working like a well-oiled machine between the crew, the guys jumping in and out of the cars. I mean, it just dawned on me when Carl said it that, God, those guys jumped out of the car, what, 500 freaking times? I mean, we jumped out of the car, I don't know, 100? They jumped out 500 times. I mean, that goes to these guys and how hard those men, women work behind the scenes to make this machine roll across. I love it. Freight train across the United States? Hell yeah. We were a freaking freight train, and it was all the backbone of our staff that were jumping in and out of the car, running to get food. I mean, when I heard Ursula saying that it was just crazy because she didn't even have time to stop because we're rolling so freaking hard. Hell yeah, but she just made it happen. And that's a lot of these people on this team. We just made it happen, and it was awesome. I mean, what a great experience, you know?
So I do want to expound on that a little bit more, because I've been doing this for 30 years as a head official, as a race director, as a racer, and I've watched a lot of teams, and it's, I mean, you blow time on exchanges if you don't get them right. And like you said, yeah, you didn't lose any time, but the potential to lose time on those maneuvers is huge. And so to nail those is such a testament to you guys and your crew. It's incredible what you did. And what I'd like to get some more information from you about is, you know, you were saying that you had some crew members join you from Facebook ads for the first time. You'd never met them before. And they stepped in and did a great job.
We didn't train them. They stepped in and just joined like family. It was great. They took care of us 100%, and they made everything just flow and make us do our job and just ride 100%. They made it so smooth for us.
And, I mean, I compare relay racing to just riding in an elevator, like I said before, with a big group of people for a week. I mean, you're stuck in there, and the potential also for arguments and fights, and that just never seemed to happen, or if it did, you dealt with it.
Yeah, it did happen. We dealt with it. We just tried to keep it calm and patient and just roll through as a team and a family.
Yeah, and I think the key to that was that we all came in with the same goal. I mean, and that was the record. And so everybody had that goal in mind. And, you know, if you had, you know, personality things, you dealt with it very quickly and got back to that goal. And we're moving towards that. The crew was there to support us. Tony put together a great, great plan so that even though we all met there and some met for the first time there, we all knew what we were doing before you got there, because the plan was communicated and everybody was able to read that, and you know, there really weren't questions to answer. It was, let's go execute.
And I don't want to just, you know, beat a dead horse, but you know, again, I've been doing this for so long, and there seems to come those times where I can't find my shorts, or I can't find my shoes, I can't find my helmet, I can't find my gloves. Oh, and again, potential of losing time, but we can't emphasize enough that well-oiled machine. I mean, which is such a cliche, but it's so fitting. You guys were exactly that.
I mean, we took some time to like really pair up the new guys with the veterans. I mean, some of us have done this four times. Some of this crew has done this four times. So, I mean, that's the best person in a vehicle to explain to the other crew member exactly how this works. And I think, you know, maybe a couple of weeks before the start, some of the new crew members were like maybe a little nervous that like they didn't know what to do. But, you know, we just sort of tell them like, look, we've done this before. We know how this works. You know, you'll know what's going on within the first few hours of the race, because, you know, you can read about it and we can explain it all to you. And as far as like guys not being ready, I mean, we always had like the next guy with his helmet in hand, ready to jump out of the vehicle if needed. And if, you know, to your point, there are times where you might lose some time, we just don't exchange right there. Just keep going. Like, somebody can ride for an extra minute or two, and we'll just get up the road and execute it perfectly next time. So, you know, we just avoid all those times of, you know, where we would lose time.
And the reason I'm harping on this, I want other teams to learn from what you did, in that, no, you don't have to lose time in these areas. You can keep it going. You can actually make time on other teams that are losing time in those situations. So, I mean, it was just phenomenal. The other thing I'd really like to talk about before we get into the race is just how you guys brought the best out in each other. Instead of that, I really noticed that in the early days, especially of team racing, where it's almost like you're fighting against the other people on your team. I want to be the fastest. And I've never sensed that ego from anybody. I think your egos are also, no, I'm kidding. But no, there was never, you wanted each other to do really well.
Right. I mean, as racers, I think we all have type A personalities. Some people wear it on their sleeve. Some people are a little more, you know, calm about it. But it's true. We all bring the best out in each other. And I think that's what's great about our team. You know, our rotation, normally on an 8-man, you have four guys that ride for 12 hours, and then another four guys. And they make it a competition between each other. We didn't do that. There's no set time where we know that it's just this two guys riding and they beat the other two guys average speed. The way we overlap things, that wasn't a consideration for us. You know, if someone was having a bad time, the other two guys come in, they motivate them, and that's what it was all about. You know, 6 hours on, and then another 6 hours, two more guys come on. So it was a constant rotation of different guys in at different shifts. So you always saw different people you're riding with.
I love that. And I mean, that's another thing I've noticed was with some teams is that teams I've been on where, oh, you know, I did most of the climbing, or I did most of this, or I put out more miles. Or I don't think that mattered to you guys, which it shouldn't.
It really didn't matter. What everyone came in here was to beat that record. And Tony obviously can climb more than or faster than I can. So, yeah, I want him to be on the course if it's more climbing. If it's descending, Tony thinks Carl's a better descender, so Carl should be on the course at that point because it wasn't a competition of who can ride harder, who can ride more. It's how can the team get to that finish line to break that record.
So, Chris, let's go ahead and get rolling with the race. The mood of everybody as you were at the neutral rollout going onto the bike path. Again, there's places you can lose time right there as you're rolling out there because you're supposed to be going 15 miles an hour. And if you get stuck behind somebody who's doing 12 miles an hour, you're just creeping back. How did that get handled?
We rolled out, and actually we did something different this year because of the eight man. We rolled out with three of us and went down the bike trail, quickly caught the team in front of us, who quickly caught the team in front of them, who quickly caught the team in front of them. And, yes, so it was a warm-up at 15, 18 miles an hour all the way for 9 miles or seven miles. And when we got off, they stopped the team and made them wait, and then they made us wait. And so we're sitting there stopped waiting for our turn, and the official lets us go and game on. And we went as hard as we could. I mean, we laid it out from the beginning.
All three of us,
rotating pulls for the next 40 minutes or whatever it was, all the way until we dropped Phil off to transition in and passed – I don't even know how many teams going full throttle because we knew we had five guys waiting, you know, and guys were already going to go to bed. Like, they weren't on their shift, so let's waste them early because they're going to recover from a 35-minute effort. So right away, it was game on right from the start. And the classic was I knew we went fast when I got the KOM on that whole segment, and some guy's like, you did it in a car. And I'm like, no, I did it with my Ram team.
So during that time, there's a steep climb in there up to Pete Pinsir's house on Sleeping Indian. And then a pretty fun descent. And did the three stay together? There was no...
I don't know. I was sleeping. So I actually didn't get to see it. I mean, all I knew is when they came off glass elevator, DeMarkey came by me like a freaking rocket and was yelling at me because I wasn't going fast enough on the transition. So I really didn't even get to see anything because they came down that. I mean, what do we have, a 40 mile an hour tailwind on that? And I'm expecting a transition at 30 miles an hour, and he came by at like 45 miles an hour. So I can't speak much to the hill after glass elevator, just only what we did after that. And we, you know, you talk about the race, and we got some really good luck. We basically outraced the weather. So basically we're faster than the weather. Is that what because we had awesome luck. We beat the bad storms. We had great winds for the most part, and you know you can't say enough about how the team gelled together. And like you said, I love it that no one had an ego. I mean, we were all out to set a goal, and that's just what we did.
So, Chris, did you hit the brakes so that you could do the transition at 30 miles an hour rather than 45?
You know, this race was very unique in its own way. I'll tell you, there were times where, one in particular, where Carl was coming so fast.
That would be so hard to do.
Carl was coming so fast, I could not get up to speed. And, boom, there he goes. And I'm like, you know what? The for all of you who can't see my expression, the first one I tried to man up and go with it, and that wasn't going to happen, so I had to pull off because he was going fast. But back to the race, if you were to ask me the one, there's two places in this race that were game changers for us, and no doubt about it, Kansas was it for us. We came out of Trinidad with a lead, with a good miles per hour average, and we hit these cross headwinds out of the south that, I'm telling you, if experience wasn't there, because 2 years prior we hit those winds even a little bit worse, and it was detrimental to our failure. We could not wrap our heads around getting through it. And I was on, and I immediately looked at Tony and I said, we have to go. We have to go. We have to average 28 miles an hour in a section. We probably can't, but we all have to. And he said, okay. And then he's like, I don't know. Like, we might have to save it. And Craig says, no, we're not saving anything. It's here and now. Like, over the next 8 hours, as a team, we pounded so hard. I mean, we were pushing on those pedals, creating so much wattage to get through that, to make sure. Because the one thing I think we all know, especially the veterans, is you do not want to be behind the clock. There is no way. When you're behind the clock, when a tiny mistake happens, it's 10 times worse. When you're ahead of the clock and a tiny mistake happens, you can brush it off and move on. And so all of us, and we pushed, and finally we started to hit Missouri, and we started to get these little tailwinds, and it was like, here we go. And it was like, for the whole team, for everybody, the crew, everybody, we did it. And I was like, okay, here we go. Let's rock and roll the next section.
So I love how Chris brought up the power meter, because chatting with Phil right after the race, he was talking about staring at the power meter when you were on climbs, because looking at miles per hour, you can feel like, gosh, I'm going way too slow. But here I'm looking at my watts, and I'm doing 400, and that I know is really good for me, or whatever. And Andrew Danley made a comment, I loved it. He said, that's power meter without being a nerd.
Correct.
And using it the way it needs to be used. And it sounds like that's what you guys did.
Yes, we did. Across. Yes, we did. Just watched our power and just made it happen. Like, the hills were quite steep and quite hard, and it's just like, when we got to altitude, that's what cracked me a lot, was the altitude climbing. I think Wolf Creek, I had a little moment. But I just dealt with it and said, we got to go now. And it's just watch your power. And basically what we were called, we were sprinting up Wolf Creek, which was amazing. We just went full gas and just charged up that hill. It was amazing.
And that's Caroline and Tara, friends of mine. They were in one of the media cars. They texted me and said, oh my God, these guys are sprinting over Wolf Creek.
Yeah, Phil, Chris, and Josh just crushed that climb. And I got to get a good recovery, and I was at the top on the TT bike ready to rail the descent. And so I took a little bit longer pull, knowing that I was on a descent and didn't have to do that much physical effort. It was more, you know, balancing the crosswinds, which allowed those guys to recover from their, you know, them crushing the climb. So it worked out really, really well. And that's where, you know, really, you know, you talk about strategy. That's where really we just put their egos in check and put the right person on the right bike on the right part of the road. And that was critical.
Tony, I want to ask you a change in strategy or anything, because now the hard part starts. You've gone through the mountains, you've gone through the winds of Kansas, the big rollers in Missouri, you cross the Mississippi, everybody's feeling fatigue, riders, crew, and now you're getting into the most trafficked part of the course. How does that change what you're doing? Because now you've got something else that you really have to deal with.
Well, kind of to Chris's point earlier, we kind of had to be ahead of the game by then, because obviously once you hit the Appalachians, your average speed is going to drop a bit. And then after the Appalachians, you're just dealing with traffic all the time. So, you know, we're out there, right. And we're like still, you know, hammering along at like 30 miles an hour, but our time stations are coming in at like 23, 24 because of all the stops. So, I mean, we knew we had to be pretty far ahead of the game by then. And then it was just, you know, maintain and hope the overall average speed doesn't drop too much despite our best efforts. Like, you know, there's only so much luck you can have running all those lights green. You know, so, you know, I think about a day out, we were pretty sure we were going to get the record because, you know, I think it doesn't matter too much how fast you go at that point because it's mostly just based on catching the lights. So, you know, it was just good that we were that far ahead by that point. And we still didn't lose very much, you know, over the last day. So that was good too.
So Kurt, was it meaningful to you to have Allied Forces sending you messages and everything, you know, support, or were you even thinking about that?
Yeah, and we talked about this in our interview a little bit before that, but I was kind of off social media for a while, and Craig was on it, and he was kind of filling us in about it, but it was pretty cool to see. I mean, we had a goal of beating their record, and we pretty much felt like that was a done deal, like maybe 3 or 4 days in, because we were figuring out the math, and we were like 60 or 70 miles ahead. And then we kind of shifted gears and thought, okay, it'd be great if we broke their time record, because, you know, we got the average speed, but if we broke their time record and we rode 110, 120 miles more, that would be even more meaningful. So to see these guys come on and start posting, you know, posts about how, you know, they're cheering us on and stuff, and they might not want to see us do it, but if they do, they're totally ecstatic for us. I mean, it was pretty cool to see. It just shows you that Ram's like one big family. You know, everyone's gone through this experience, and it's a life-changing experience, and it's something that I feel like a lot of riders should try to do because it's just a once-in-a-lifetime event.
And I love that you came through this with nobody saying, oh my gosh, Team Beamer did this, or we saw them doing this. It was just clean. And everybody I've talked to was, those guys were amazing, which is so fun to hear. I really like that a lot.
And we had fun together too. I mean, in the van, yeah, you take a couple minutes of recovery, and then you're hanging out with two friends and two friend drivers and having a good time in the back of the van. And you're off time, the atmosphere almost 100% of the time in the RV, it's a positive atmosphere, and it was people I didn't know, but we were family and we got along. It was very nice how we all gelled together for that one goal.
So I want to get all of your take on 8-man. I talked to Phil about that, and he was talking about how hard it was. And I go back to my first Ram in 1993, and we won 4-man, and I was excited, but I'd wanted to go solo. And I actually had a guy who's really a Ram legend. I saw him a little bit later the next year, and he was like, you didn't do Ram, you did Relay Ram. And I was like, okay. And, you know, it took me a while. That really hurt. But when I realized that Relay Ram is Ram, it's its own race. And with the mindset that you went into this, that's the mindset you have to have when you go into this, because it is a race and it's its own event. Is it solo Ram? No, it's totally different. And I loved the way that you took that on. And I think what you did was brutally hard. And I'd just like to, in conclusion, get a little bit of input from each of you on that for people that are interested in doing Ram, looking at whatever division it is, about that mindset that you need to have when you come into this race.
You do raise a good point, and it's funny, we were just talking about this last night, a few of us. I think one of the advantages that we had or have is all of us are teammates outside of Ram. We all know, we all race together. We're all USA Cycling licensed riders. And some of us have raced together for years and years. And the one thing that always matters to us is when we show up to a race, and we race Tulsa Tough the week before Ram, the goal is to win the race. The goal is not to get 3 in the top 10 or 2 in the top 5. The goal is to win the race. So however that sets up, Tony, Phil, they might be our best guys on a certain course. Mike, Carl might be a best guys on a different course. You know, I might be different. Kurt might be different. Josh is different. Craig is different. It's so the goal is to win the race. So however it plays out during the race, we all had that same attitude of winning. And no matter what, that's why we didn't have the infighting between riders or crew, because we all had the same goal in mind, to win the race, to set a goal and accomplish it. And we accomplished both. We got 2 world records because of it. And it's the attitude of the team and the crew.
Mr. National
Well, thank you. I'll have to kind of go off that same thing, and it's, you know, the hard part about any race, and I think of any division you're racing, is really to check your ego at the door. I mean, what really makes a strong team? I mean, we've got climbers, we've got time trialists, you know, we've got the mix, but it's knowing your limits, it's knowing where you're good at, and you know, when we were in the van, let's talk strategy and work through that strategy in the van. We were literally talking in the van where to drop people, where not to drop people, where this person's going to be faster and that. So it's knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, and going from there. So my word to anybody else coming into Ram would be build a team of not one certain discipline, but you build it around multi-disciplines. And if you can work as a team, that's where you're going to accomplish your goal. Because, I mean, you look across this eight-man team, and it's a very diverse group that worked very well together because we did check our egos at the door, and we were okay with dropping somebody at the top of the hill. We were okay with dropping a climber at the bottom and a climber doing an eight-minute pull instead of 15. We were completely okay with that. We just said, hey, this guy's better at this than I am. Go for it. So to me, that was the biggest thing, and really our biggest asset that helped us accomplish the goal and what we did. And, you know, we kicked ass. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, Michael said it perfect. I don't know how to follow it up. You know, we just came together as like a perfect family. We all walked in and it clicked right at the door. It said, here's what we got to do. And we just went after it and we stuck together the whole entire race.
So yeah, I'm not part of this team, but did four person Ram in the past, and then was asked to do this, and I was like, heck yeah, twice as many folks, and I get to go as hard as I can and hold nothing back, and that was really appealing, and it was a lot of fun, and I didn't even realize how fun it was. It was even more fun than I expected. You got real rest, and you could really go as hard as you could, and you know, like these guys said before me, you're in the van hanging out with your friends. I mean, and then you go out and you kill it for 15 minutes and hang out with your friends for 45. And in the RV, probably the hardest part was choosing to go to sleep, because you're hanging out with your friends. You're talking about the pulls you did. You're talking about the descent you did or the turn you took or whatever, and just having a blast. And you're like, oh, but I really need rest, and you know, so I can go do it again later. As far as advice for other folks that are interested in doing the event, get your friends together, get people that you want to spend a week together, and do it. And I think that any eight cyclists can do this. I don't know that they can do it as fast as we did, but they can do it and have a great time and have a lot of fun and maybe dial it back. You don't need to be as intense as us, and you know, ride an hour at a time and then take 7 hours off and have a great time, see the country. It was awesome.
To continue on his point, I totally agree that it's eight riders can do this event. It's about what your goal is, and you can do it as an eight-man team and have more fun with it, or you could do it as a solo and maybe even remember it just because you're so sleep deprived. But overall, great event. So glad I kind of hinted when these guys finished their four-man team that maybe an eight-man team might be a good idea, and I might join them 2 years ago. So I'm so glad that they did their four-man and that we expanded to an eight-man team, and we got this experience together.
So I kind of look at Ram and the different events as kind of a continuum of endurance to speed. You know, like the solos are just endurance. Two-man is endurance with a little bit of speed. You know, four-man's combination, and eight-man is just pure speed. So I think one of the great things this year is, especially Tony and I experienced, like in the past years, like we've dedicated our year to training for Ram, and that requires a lot of mileage, a lot of fast. Phil and Chris were more like, you know, continuing their racing, but this year we were able to just basically race and not have to worry about, you know, putting in those huge, huge miles we did for a four-man. So I mean, if you break it down, if you ask anyone, okay, you know, we basically only rode 3 hours a day as an eight-man team, but we did that in like, you know, 85, 90 miles. So if you look at it in that perspective, it's a pretty amazing accomplishment, but it just goes to show you that this eight-man is all about speed and not so much about endurance. It was just kind of a new thing for us, which I liked.
Yeah, following up on what Kurt was saying, I mean, all the different disciplines, they're all very difficult. But, you know, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to doing an 8-man because, oh, this will require less hours perhaps on the bike. But it's no easier. We're just going so much faster because you have to. you know, half the volume means you better be going, you know, at least 2 miles an hour faster all the time. So, I mean, I guess if I were to give any advice, it would be, you know, RAM is a lot more accessible than people might think it is. You don't need a six-figure budget to do it. You don't need the best riders in the world to do it. You know, you can just grab a bunch of people, you know, some friends to volunteer, and you can go do RAM and enjoy it.
You guys, thanks so much for taking the time to talk. Our banquet's getting started. We got to make our way on in there to get you some awards. So from the Race Across America Mobile Studios at the DoubleTree in Annapolis, I'm George Thomas.
Thanks, George.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.